Let's call this evening's meeting to order, please. Roll call, please.
Steele.
Here.
Cable, absent. McBride.
Yes, here.
Merkin.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Holstrom. Absent. Berwood, absent.
Thanks. Are there any changes or additions to tonight's agenda? Hearing none, the agenda will stand approved. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes from the 6th of September? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. This is our time for public comment. I see no members of the public, but I'm going to pause for a moment anyway. And we'll move on to public hearings. So, Jerry, you pretty much going to take it from here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's do it.
These are amendments to basically five chapters, chapter 50 or 85, chapter 87, land development regulations, chapter 90, conditional use permit, and chapter 92 is the administrative chapter, which includes information about variances. So what you have before you is what we're referring to as process ordinances, and they address the development applications that include subdivisions, conditional use permits, and variance appeal applications. And currently we do not have specific language in our land development regulations that address what one would do to submit a application, you know, from the submittal through the review process, through the application process, or through the action process. Prior to me, prior to my arrival 2 years ago, August 2015, previous director went to the Board of Supervisors with a resolution that addressed what the process was. That's the format that was used during that time period. We think that it's important to have the processes identified clearly in the land development regulations, so when you're submitting a plat, you know exactly, you know, what department's involved, that it's going to require a conceptual review meeting possibly before you actually make the submittal, or you know, our department does the routing. Where do these things go to? Do they go to Planning and Zoning Commission before they go on to Board of Adjustment? Do they go to Planning and Zoning Commission before Board of Supervisors? Is there a staff report involved? Is this an item that requires a resolution, an ordinance? Does it need to be published? That type of thing. So that's what's before you. We're trying to provide clarity on those processes for those development applications. And the pattern really is after the language that we use when we went through the process, when we identified the process for rezonings and amending the Cornerstone to Capstone comprehensive plan. So if you look at the language for those two chapters, you're going to see some similarities. I have hard copies of the proposed changes. Proposed changes are in red. I've got on the thumb drive the actual chapters. I was just planning on just giving you a summary of, you know, major changes. Also, what's going on too is with the existing language, there's some shifting within the chapter so that everything flows consistently. There were a couple of additional things that we added in addition to the processes. Our goal and part of our work program is we are to look at existing language in the land development regulations to see if it's still, you know, if it still makes sense for what we're trying to do. And so we've done that review. We're not proposing any of those changes at this time. You'll probably see something toward the end of the year or the first part of next year, consistent with the direction of the C2C plan. But I'm thinking I'll just go through the chapters. Chapter 85, we did add a definition of
Jerry, did you say you had hard copies?
I wouldn't mind having one.
I can go through what's on the thumb drive.
Or I can look at it on the screen if there's one.
You have one copy of each.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. So
substantial action. It's referenced in the variance chapter in 92. And variances are valid for 6 months unless substantial action has taken place. And we don't really define what substantial action is. We had a case where a variance was granted to a property owner. And the only thing that really was accomplished was the pouring of a pad. It was for a setback for an accessory structure. But prior to the submittal of the variance appeal, the pad had already been poured. So there's it had come up. He didn't do the project. So really the variance was void because there was no, under my determination, there was no substantial action because the work that was done prior to the actual submittal. So we thought it was important to get a definition established. So that's really the only thing in Chapter 85.
You identified two issues in just that example that you just gave, right? One is the definition of what is substantial action, and then the other was the time frame, right? Substantial work had been completed, but it was prior to the approval, so...
Right. And that's existing language that they're valid for a six-month period, unless substantial action has taken place.
And I would just... My only input would be substantial action has taken place post-approval, right? During the period, during the validity period.
Right.
Because otherwise they could do a significant amount of work, then come and get, like, exactly that example... They cleared, they poured, then they got approval and did nothing. They could argue and say substantial action has been done. That part of it is fulfilled, just...
Right. Now we're saying it means the near completion of the work is required. So, and again, we there was no definition, so I was left to...
No, that's fine. I mean, just the idea of putting a... a timeline and even some, which you did, right? Substantial activity, I don't know what you could say, majority of activity or something, so that you could designate how much work is going to be done and is it more than halfway or, you know.
That's how it fell on near completion.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that was a tough one. But that's the only definition that we're attacking here. Again, you're probably going to see a lot more later. Another thing that we're adding that we see in like plats of survey subdivisions where they're cutting divisions through natural resource areas, and the benefit maybe of, we're not requiring it, but having them consider, if you're going to do a division, consider the natural topography and use that as maybe the guideline or the boundary for division, so you don't have, because sometimes you're creating situations where you know to cross it you have to do you have to create a bridge or and how usable is that space when you cut that, but again the language is set up such that it's they're encouraged to follow natural.
Are there ways that we can use language stronger than encouraging, or I mean, could it say
we don't have anything right now, and so like I said, we're getting plots of survey, which is just a simple once into two, and then you get the minor subdivisions, which could be four divisions,
right.
Major more than that, and they're.
I'm just thinking to align with the C2C plan where areas of natural resources have been identified and some of the, it's not policy, but some of the recommendations from that are, to recommendations towards preservation of natural areas. I'm wondering if there's ways that we could include language so that it would say something like aligning with the C2C plan and, you know, I don't know if you could use the word prohibiting, but, you know, strongly discourage development or alteration of, you know, natural resource, areas identified as natural resource.
I'm a little confused. Have we gone on to Chapter 87?
Thank you for asking that question.
What you're talking about, 87.02, the change there, but we didn't say we're now talking about Chapter 87.
Right. Yeah, I'm just talking about three things that got changed in addition to the process ordinances, and that was the second thing.
We're talking about 87.02 sub 2 right now.
Is that in red?
You
got my copy? I think you're right.
Okay, thank
you. It's in the first.
I'm looking at 85 going, where are you coming from on this? And so now I understand that we're on a different page, so thank you so much. Yeah. You're talking about this, it's talking about creeks and streams or drainage ways and natural stuff. So now that kind of makes more sense. Thank you very much.
So that actual language is where practical subdivisions should follow natural contours such as creeks, streams, or drainage ways?
Right.
And again, you're saying, is there any reason why I can't say shop? You already said we're practical.
We're practical. If that's the recommendation of the commission, I'd be glad.
I think we've run into issues where, you know, it last month where he's clear-cut trees, is planning on building a pond or a lake as he would like to, and the answer is there's no language prohibiting it. Even though it's designated as a natural area, there's no language to prohibit him doing.
Well, that was prior to the development, the subdivision.
I get it. I'm just saying that where we run into issues is where there's a lack of language. And if the language is we encourage it, then there's really nothing prohibiting it other than we encourage it. And then, as we've seen, the public can demonstrate against it. We can say, please no, because we encourage against it. And then Board of Supervisors approves it because there's nothing against it.
And changing what Aaron suggested, changing should to shall would really put the burden on the applicant to show why it wasn't practical.
Agreed.
So I would support.
There's the latter part of that.
When we get to making motions, if we keep it on this mind, I would support changing that from should to shall.
And this is just applicable to apply to survey?
I was thinking all divisions.
So you added a similar statement for subdivisions.
Well, the intent was for all divisions, period.
But it's under plat survey.
But not just for plat survey. So we could add another sentence prior to the platting, subdivision platting.
Purely logistical. That if the intent is for it to apply to all divisions, I'm not sure that putting it under plat of survey alone is going to cover that. You know what I mean?
Right. Although,
how far do you want to go with this?
All divisions.
Because if there's not similar language in the sections that apply to subdivision plats.
And there isn't.
There isn't. So all this new statement would apply to right now is the division of a parcel that has previously been undivided.
Right.
And dividing that into two only.
You're at 87.02?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I ask the question, is there any reason why I can't say shall? That I guess that doesn't necessarily mean I support the statement.
It's just having the applicant think about what the impact is of creating divisions that traverse through natural areas, whether they be wetlands, treed areas.
You're assuming that they care.
Well,
right? No, honestly, there's the assumption.
I guess the usability of the space, can you get to it? Can you put a building back there? If there's a,
you're assuming that the drawing of a line on paper means anything about how the property will be used or developed in the future.
Or that everybody has the same understanding of practical.
No, I'm. So that what I'm trying to get to is where we've spent all the high level time and energy on the C2C plan to identify, identify where there are areas of natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
And where, let's say that there's a plat that crosses that. If this, the ideals of the C2C plan said we would like to protect these areas,
yeah,
then I'd like to codify that so that when somebody comes and says, oh, I have this plat that's half natural area and half not, and I'm going to develop the whole thing, subdivide it and develop the whole thing, we have something in there where we can say, no, because it says that you...
Yeah.
Shall respect the identification of the area. Do you know what I mean? That's what I'm trying to get to.
I think I do. I'm not sure that this statement does it.
What's a drainage way? The way water drains, or what does it actually mean?
Definition?
If there is one, I'd like to know. Yeah.
So it might be a draw or a ravine that channels water,
surface
even though
water.
It's not actively flowing.
Culvert, right. We have a...
We do not define drainage way.
So my question is, Jerry and Marvin, I appreciate the end that you're after. I'm wondering how this statement achieves that. Because all this is the drawing of property lines, parcel lines.
Right.
And if I want to have this piece plus that little corner that's across the creek in my property, how does that impact the use of the property?
And that's why it's encouraged where it's applicable. You know, and maybe it's most of it's farm ground, and there's really going to be no development impact potential.
I see the benefits of it. I mean, but I don't think that they're the same benefits. You know what I mean?
You're talking platting versus development.
And then with land ownership,
this doesn't affect use, development or use of the property at all.
With land ownership changes, use changes, you know, and so where it might be ag use, future use may change to something other than ag if it's permitted in the district.
And that's fine. And I think to Aaron's point, he's probably right, and what I'm looking for is not accomplished in the language of the platting so much as the language of as development, right?
Mm-hmm. It's the more intangible analysis of the development overall.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where I think we've seen a lot of ambiguity in a lot of areas where the answer is we can't say no because there's no language to prohibit it, right?
And that's probably a different issue than the...
That is probably a different issue than this, so I stand corrected.
I'm going to say I'm not wild about that. I don't know that I like that statement in particular in the plat of survey requirement. Plats of survey are filed all the time for really large divisions.
Sometimes it includes development.
Sometimes. But it's not so much a development tool as the subdivision process itself.
Is there a way that we could, and you'll have to tell me, but is there a way to put language in there that rather than just saying that the plat shall be, you know, drawn mindful of where applicable, you know, whatever that language is.
It would be a similar statement, but in the subdivision.
But I'm wondering if you could say, I don't know how to say it.
Well, you think
what I want to convey is when you're drawing the plat, be mindful of your determined use.
The impact, yeah.
Right? So if your determined use is just ag, then whatever. If your determined use is I'm drawing a plat for a subdivision where I want to develop all these, my goal would be, okay, when you're drawing up that plat, identify the areas of natural resources so that you're not saying, oh, well, here's this one lot that, you know, let's say it's a 10-house subdivision, and here's one lot that's 80% in a natural resource area, and we're going to put a house and clear 50% of that, or, you know, whatever.
Could I go back to my question?
Just one second. But what I'd like is to say, when you're drawing that plat, be mindful of what your determined use is so that that those natural areas would be protected, right? So if you're going to draw a 10-house subdivision, draw your 10 houses so you can get your 10 houses in there without infringing on that natural area. And I don't know how to say that, and it's definitely not one sentence, but I'm wondering if there's a way to kind of give a warning in the plat design.
The conservation overlay district, which kind of gets to that point where you're preserving natural resources and you can actually get density bonuses by reducing lots and staying away.
I asked what a drainage way was, and you said we didn't have a definition.
Yeah, you asked for a definition.
Would a grass waterway be considered a drainage way?
It could be.
Well, I wouldn't do that then, because a grass waterway is going to be maintained better if it's on one person's property than if it's in no person's land. For just one example. And it's also not a natural contour.
It would be a natural contour.
Well, it would be a natural contour, but if your purpose is, yeah, well, it depends on what's happening. But if your purpose is that you're wanting to maintain some something, not have erosion, not do whatever, you don't want a grass waterway split up between two owners so one can say that's your problem, the other can say, no, that's your problem. You want it on somebody's land.
You know what, though? That happens all the time. Mm-hmm. In subdivision platting, drainage ways are divided among lots. It's pretty common, but...
But you don't want to encourage it and tell people they have to.
It's pretty common.
But do you want to tell people they have to?
As long as
it?
Everybody's participating in the requirement to keep the materials out of it and keep it maintained, it works, whether it's one or two, but...
I think as a statement of process, this introduces more problems than it solves. I totally get the point of having subdividers consider more, give more
natural contours
instead of just dropping squares on a map or rectangles on a map, regardless of what's underneath. I mean, I totally get that objective. I'm just not sure that this achieves that.
What would you propose to?
I would propose more focus on the conservation overlay.
We have that, and I think it's been used once.
So, but that's kind of my point, is if that's an objective of ours, then we need to find a policy solution to put it into use more.
We are working on an amendment to stormwater drainage, and we're kind of reinducing that into the fall and providing incentive.
Right. But I think that's outside of the scope of a procedural change. You know what I mean? That's my feeling. I mean, personally, I feel like we got to be careful not to assume that just because someone has access to land, that they're going to use it in an irresponsible way. Clear cut.
I don't make that assumption. What I'm trying to do is provide the safeguard. Because what we've seen is someone that does do something in, let's say, in a perceived irresponsible way, there's no way to say stop.
Right. But is drawing the lines differently a safeguard?
No. And this is not. No, and I agree.
This is as they have the option. We consider this when you're, creating your lines. We're not making this a.
So I kind of like that. You said the word consider. I think I would rather that this language, if it's purely procedural, if you're just trying to plant an idea in the subdivider's mind,
right?
Say, applicants should consider in making divisions. Applicants should consider natural contours and landscape features. You know what I mean?
Right. It says should follow natural. So it, I mean, it doesn't say shall.
So here's a question. Let's assume that they've just followed them the rectangles on the map method.
Yeah.
And you say that's.
You know,
that's stupid.
We can bring that up when we do that in the review.
That's
process.
Stupid. They could say, yeah, but the language doesn't.
I'm trying to envision.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but we're not putting very much faith in property owners when we say it's stupid. Why is it stupid to have a division that doesn't follow a creek and it crosses the creek, includes a corner over there? You know, what's the good of
this?
Are we accomplishing by introducing that statement? Plus, we got to remember that just because when you do a plot of survey, just because you followed the contour and didn't include a large piece of natural area in that property doesn't mean that the natural area is now the property of Story County.
Right.
It's not automatically under preservation. It's still there. You know, somebody owns it still. You know,
they would still have to plot around it as a area A.
Right.
You know, whatever.
So now, but now in a subdivision plat, though, maybe that is the right place to have a policy that requires natural areas to be set aside in an outlot to be maintained collectively by the homeowners association under certain conservation principles. I mean, now we're getting somewhere, but it really doesn't have much to do with the boundaries. It has more to do with the
subdivision.
The action.
Specific, right.
The use of it.
I think we started here because, you know, the most simplest divisions are plots of survey. And some cities, I know Ames, they're, a plot of survey is part of their subdivision. It's included with us, it's considered a subdivision.
Yeah.
Whereas ours, it's not. It's three or more divisions. It's a subdivision. So, I mean, we could relocate this too.
So you get a lot of plots of survey that are just oftentimes agricultural in nature, right?
Yeah, most of them. A lot of them are boundary line adjustments or increasing lots.
Right. So if you introduce this concept into plot of survey, there's a large percentage that are purely, sometimes just for tax purposes. You know, now they got to be looking for contours and drainage ways and
they're splitting off the farmstead.
Yeah. I would support a statement. I mean, I guess I could support this since it just says should, but I would really prefer a statement that says something like, you know, when drawing division lines, subdivider should consider the locations of natural contours, creeks, streams, and other landscape features. You know, just. If the idea is just to plant the idea in their heads that they should give it a little more thought.
That's what the intent
is. Yeah. Okay.
We have nothing now.
Okay. I think focused all of our energy on all these issues we've transferred onto this one little statement.
That's a good warm up.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. I hope it's just the warm up. Again, the where practical part. If you're going to argue one person's practicality versus another person's perception of that. I would strike out the word practical. That's my answer.
It's all just wordsmithing.
That's
right. You know, if you take out where practical, then you could still just say applicant should consider, and it still doesn't have any absolute teeth to it.
No, but you won't have the argument about what's practical and what's not.
But again, I think Aaron's point is right, that the lines don't necessarily matter for a standard plat of survey for a subdivision, unless you're talking about residential or the, you know.
Sometimes they're for residential, for building a single family dwelling. A lot of times it's boundary line adjustment.
Again, a lot larger. The plotting, I think, is maybe the wrong place to put this, but I don't know where to put it. But the idea of trying to provide some policy-based protection of areas designated as natural resources in the CDC plan. That's what I'm after, is because we know it doesn't exist right now. So how do we get there? And I guess that's my question. If this isn't this teases at that, and maybe it's not the right place to
put it. I think
you're
talking about a future revision.
That
discussion.
It's a big thing to tackle, you know.
It is, I agree. Yeah. But I think it's valuable because we're seeing a lot of development and we're seeing a lot of requests for things that, you know, how do we support public interest without some way of saying sure.
I agree, but whatever statement we end up with, we should be able to look at it and explain why what we're requiring is beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've heard that with the statement. It sounds good to follow a natural creek bed, but I don't know that necessarily.
I will withdraw my concern. Where platting is concerned, if it makes sense, that's fine. I'm more thinking of when we're talking about platting specific to creating a, you know, residential parcel subdivision, things like that, is where I'd like to see some way of regulating development in areas where the CDC plan has identified that the county wants to protect natural resources. And if this does that, great. If this is where that should happen and we're not doing it, then I'd like to see it. If it should happen someplace else, then make sure that's on your work plan. Right?
Well, and when you cross tree areas, wetlands, grass areas, when you start dividing up the land and change ownership, you might have a situation where it's one owner and now it's four owners or five owners. You know, you create a situation where you've got that maybe area in the corner that you're talking about. How are you going to get to it other than to go through these natural, so you're going to impact the natural resources to get to that piece that you're trying to get to.
Assuming you have a reason to get to it.
Susan, yeah. Assuming you have a reason, maybe it's something that you just leave alone, but...
Right.
You know.
Right. So then is our policy objective to keep as large a tract as possible in the hands of one owner?
I'm not saying that.
Is that a better preservation and conservation strategy than breaking up into smaller pieces? That just lines up.
I'm not going there.
Yeah. I don't feel strong enough about the statement the way it's written now. I just,
Maybe if we continue on, we'll find some place to put it or we'll find something
yeah.
better.
Okay. Again, I wasn't planning on going through every single section. I was going to give you a broad brush stroke. If there's something that you want to talk about specifically, we can do that.
This plot. New inserts in the platting requirements. I mean, that's just platting requirements, really, right? There's no
Wait, are you referring to 87?
Yeah.
You say, is it just process or is there any policy change?
Yeah, again, what we're focusing in on is subdivision plat submittal, the process for submitting a subdivision plat in this chapter.
Right. The application process, what the plat should contain.
Right. Whether it's residential parcel subdivision, ag subdivision, minor or major subdivision plat, what are they? What are they?
Basically, reflects the way you're doing it right now. Anyway, it just
putting it writing in words.
So whereas that first statement we spent a lot of time talking about actually has some policy or some policy implications, the rest of it really is pretty straightforward.
Right.
Let me ask a question. If we were to adopt this, which we're talking about as process, would it change what any applicant could do under the current language?
As far as the use of
yes.
the property? You're always restricted to whatever the zoning district the proposed division is in. You're talking about just this statement?
Everything that you're rewriting here. Is it only just the process that people have to follow? It is not. That's why I use the word policy. It doesn't change anybody's ability to do what they currently can do under the zoning ordinance, correct?
Correct. Okay. Because we are operating on a situation where we follow state law, we follow past department practices. And again, the method that was used was a resolution was provided to the Board of Supervisors every year that identified these processes that we've decided to put in writing. And so we think it's important when someone is interested in following a process, whether it be subdivision, conditional use permit application, or variance, that it be identified in that chapter so they know exactly what they're getting into, you know, what's it all about. No question, you know. So that's the goal. I'll try to clarify.
Okay. I was just breezing through it. And
I
think sometimes what you think is a process statement right at first turns out to be a policy statement. And I was afraid of that on the plat of survey statement. So.
Yeah. And again, I mean, it starts off submittal process. And again, we really tried to pattern the language the way we did it with the rezoning. Submittal process, and then when we adopted the C2C, we realized we didn't have a process for, you know, what do you do to amend the C2C plan? Well, there was nothing written, so the pattern mirrors the language for the most part with the rezoning and that C2C amendment process. So,
okay. Are there any questions about those process codifications in Chapter 87?
I just found one, just scrolling through it.
Yeah.
87.08, minor subdivision plats. And minor subdivision plats are truly minor, right?
Right. Typically,
you're having an applicant submit an application and then must attend a conceptual review meeting with county departments and other applicable entities as appropriate.
Right.
That seems kind of like overkill. No? Don't do it now.
Yeah, we do.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have...
I mean, I know you sent things around for review.
And we talked about that actually during the C2C is,
okay.
And we talked about these before, is the idea of...
Yeah. I know you can't see this, Linda, but this is on our website that kind of addresses, the boards, the commissions,
okay.
And then for whatever submittal is, here's the process. And like one of the first things, our first meeting that we had with Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, I want to make sure that is this the process that you want our department to follow? And the message or the response back was, this is it. So in conceptual review, there's an application. We ask for usually some sketch information. We don't require professional drawings, but it's a very informal process with our department, environmental health, engineering, auditor, assessors, conservation. And it's just a good way to kind of learn about what's being proposed. The applicant can ask questions of all the department representatives that are there, and we can ask questions about the project. And then if they decide to go on, then they can submit for the formal process.
The major difference between a minor subdivision plat and a major subdivision plat is?
Four lots.
So four lots. basically what the minor plat process does is let you out of some stuff, but four lots still can have significant impact on things. Mm-hmm. And the great part about the conceptual review is that you do it before the applicant is invested in anything.
And we do those every week now. It used to be once a month.
Yeah.
We do them every week. If we get an application on or before Tuesday, Tuesday noon, we'll take it that Thursday.
Yeah.
And we've gotten a boatload of them.
So. Prevents a lot of problems down the road, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Saves the applicant a lot of money.
Yeah, because we don't require a fee. We don't require them to go to an engineer or an architect. They can sketch something on
back of a napkin sketch.
Well, hopefully a little bit better than that, but close to that.
Yeah. Okay.
We always say informal. So.
Anything else on 87?
And again, so it's ag and residential parcel subdivisions. Those are reviewed by the county departments. Then they go on to the Board of Supervisors for action. The minor and the minor and major go to Planning and Zoning Commission and then Board of Supervisors for action.
Okay, on Chapter 90, what do you have for us? You don't have to read it. Just
It's conditional uses. Again, you can submit an application for a conditional use permit if it's identified in that table in the back of Chapter 90. So, again, conceptual review is how it starts. We do require, a written narrative, a sketch from the property owner, from the applicant. Sometimes they have an engineer at that stage or an architect that they're working with. But we have that informal review. If they want to proceed, then we go through the formal process, which involves the submittal. We call it interagency review. So that would all the materials, the application, the drawings would get routed to all the departments for review. We shepherd that process. We send notices to property owners and cities within 2 miles of the request. We work on a staff report. As I said, we have a public hearing that comes before the Planning and Zoning Commission. Planning and Zoning Commission makes a recommendation to the Board of Adjustment at another hearing, which again, we do notices again. And then that's pretty much it. I think we set out, the appeals process, where that language wasn't in there before. You had to go to state law, Code of Iowa, to find that language. So we're trying to get that out there. But those are the major steps.
Again, this is all processed if you're already following it. This is just
putting it in writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And a lot of the process is actually dictated to us. It's just not neatly packaged in one spot.
In our land development regulation?
Yeah, like for example,
some of it's there.
The appeal to district court and that sort of stuff. I mean, that's been codified before. It just hasn't been neatly codified in this
chapter.
Okay. Any questions on that section? That was 90. The highlights on 92?
92 is the administrative chapter, and that's where you'll see language on the variance process. Again, if somebody wants to build a house, build an accessory structure, some improvement that does not meet setbacks or height requirements, they can submit an application and have it be reviewed by staff, other departments, and ultimately those are addressed by the Board of Adjustment. So again, on this, it would be a interagency submittal. We do send notices to property owners within a quarter mile. All our notifications for everything we do is a quarter of a mile minimum. We send notices to cities within 2 miles. We prepare a staff report. We have a public hearing. Again, you'll see existing language that's in the chapter. We didn't affect that. We have to prove that there's an unnecessary hardship and that the variance should be granted. We put in language that the Board of Supervisors can remand a decision. Whatever the decision is, within 30 days, they can ask the Board of Adjustment to rehear it. They can't tell them to change the decision, but they can ask them to take a look at it again. That's in state law. And then we added the language about the appeals process. Within 30 days, an applicant or interested person, property owner, can appeal to district court. Again, that's in state law, but it was not in our language in the ordinance. And then we added the language about the substantial action, which we kind of talked about in the beginning.
Any questions about the changes to 92? All right. So, Commission, we need to make a recommendation on each of these.
Yeah, because the goal would be to go to the Board of Supervisors within 2 weeks. And this is a public hearing item, so we have to ask if there's anybody in the public that would like to comment on these, since this is an ordinance.
Gotcha. Yep. So let's open the public hearing on all the amendments to these four chapters at 10 minutes to 5. Anyone who would like to comment on these amendments? Hearing none, we will close the public hearing. If there's any additional commission discussion, now's the time to have it, or we can entertain a motion. I'd recommend that let's do four motions and four votes.
For the four chapters?
One on each chapter. Starting in chapter 85. Do we have a motion?
And the motion is to pass these on, to accept them as is.
So we're looking for a variety of motions. It could be to recommend to the Board of Supervisors denial of the amendments, or approval of the amendments.
Or number one.
Yep, right.
Number one is approval. Two is you have additional things that you want to add.
Yep.
Three is denial. And then four would be to table it, because you would like you to do additional things or do additional research.
You ready for a motion?
I'm ready.
I would recommend that we forward the proposed change in Chapter 85 to the Board of Supervisors for approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Merkin, second by McBride. Is there any discussion on the motion? Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Steele.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
And on Chapter 87, do we have a motion?
Chapter 87 is land development, land division requirements.
I would recommend that we forward the amendments to the Board of Supervisors for approval with the elimination of 87.02 sub 2. Which is the clause that we discussed for quite a while.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Is there a discussion on the motion? Stephanie, are you clear on the alteration?
Yes.
Okay. We have a roll call vote, please.
Merkin.
Aye.
Steele.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
And on the amendments to Chapter 90, which is conditional uses, do we have a motion?
I would so move that we forward to the Board of Supervisors recommending approval.
Is there a second?
I second that.
Motion by Merkin, second by McBride. Roll call, please.
McBride.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
And finally, Chapter 92.
Anybody else want it?
Which is the administration.
The administration chapter.
I would move that we recommend the proposed amendments to Chapter 92 to the Board of Supervisors for their approval.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Motion by Merkin, second by Smith. Any discussion on the motion? Roll call, please.
Steele.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
All right. What do you have for us next? Staff comments.
Stephanie has been working hard on the calendar, the meeting calendar for 2018, and she's indicated that we would typically have a meeting. We meet the first Wednesday of every month, and July 4th is on the first Wednesday of the month. So we have a question if the commission would like to have the July meeting on the 5th, which would be Thursday instead of Wednesday, or have that first meeting be the 11th, which would be the second Wednesday of July.
I'm talking about 18.
And again, apparently the first Wednesday is July 4th in 2018, and so we're asking, would you like that meeting to be the 5th, the following day, or the next Wednesday, which would be the 11th of July?
The next Wednesday.
That's what I would say, too.
Could we have a simple motion? Or
so that would be the 11th?
It would be July 11th.
Okay.
Make a motion to move the July 4th, 2018 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to July 11th, 2018.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same.
Thank you. I thought I'd bring up just a couple of work program items that we're working on that we're going to be bringing to the Planning and Zoning Commission in November. One of the things that we're working on is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan amendment. We were asked to kind of look at the land use from the area, like north of Ames to the city of Gilbert. So we're looking at development patterns. Just to give you an idea, I gave a quarterly report for our department yesterday, and just for the third quarter, zoning permit applications, we had like 44 for the third quarter, which was down one from 2016. It was up 13 permits from 2015. Most of those were accessory structures. There's like 16 accessory, 14 of them were single family. We had probably 5 additions, 9 decks and fences. So we're looking at the development patterns. We're looking at the existing designations. We're looking at changes that have happened, with the school, the paving of Hyde. We're going to be looking at busing information, proposed bus routes, information from the school on their growth plans. But the goal is to come to the Planning and Zoning Commission with, what we see as far as any proposed recommended changes. Before we do that, we're planning on sitting down with the Ames and Gilbert staff. But again, we'd like to come to the Planning and Zoning Commission in November, and then likely the following week or two to the Board of Supervisors. So that's one thing that we're working on. One of the things, another thing is construction or demolition site, locating a site or two, three or four, in case there's a natural disaster in the county that we have some locations, if the Boone County landfill gets inundated with materials, that we've got a place that we can have citizens bring materials to. We are actually planning on working with third-party contractors, haulers. We've got some sites located that are on major corridors. Using DNR standards, these are locations that are not, that don't have any natural resources, they don't have floodplains, they're within certain distances from residential dwellings, they're certain distances from like daycares and that type of thing. But there's a lot of, we've been working on this, I think, shortly after I started, there's a lot of plates spinning on it. We've got a lease agreement that we're working on. We're proposing a new ordinance that addresses, you know, what's the process to follow if we have, you know, if we have to institute these sites, use these sites for debris management, sorting. You know, what is the responsibility of the property owner in sorting materials? What kind of materials will be accepted? Where do the materials need to be placed in order for our contractors to come and pick it up so that we can ultimately be reimbursed from FEMA? We're working on our debris management plan, revising that. We've got an existing document. We've had meetings with the Reclamation Center in Ames, the landfill operator in Boone, Keith and his staff, emergency management. We've had several meetings. And so we'd like to bring, you know, where we're at with that item. Amelia and Keith are going to be speaking at a Homeland Security conference on the 18th. So she's going to be talking about all the things that we've been working on. And we keep hearing from Keith that we are pretty far ahead compared to other jurisdictions, because apparently a lot of jurisdictions don't even really, they may be thinking about it, but they're not really taking actions to move toward a cohesive plan. So, again, we're hoping to have something on that. Stormwater drainage, erosion control, we are proposing an amendment. We've got an existing provision in our ordinance that requires, you know, when you submit a subdivision plat, when you submit a site plan drawing, when you're submitting something that requires a CUP, that you meet the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual requirements, that you meet the SUDIS requirements. And that's about as far as it goes. So we want to try to identify, provide more clarity to applicants, to engineers, exactly what kind of information we're seeking. We want to have them identify the pre-development site condition information. We want to know exactly what's being proposed. We want to see post-site condition information. The Iowa Stormwater Management Manual references best management practices, you know, detention basin, bioswells, check dams. There's a whole host of things that you can do to slow down and control stormwater. So we want to be able to be clear about what the expectations are. We are envisioning like a worksheet type process that applicants would go through, where they would disclose this information. It would be reviewed and evaluated. But again, this is something that we've been working on internally so far. We're going to be sitting down with Conservation, Leanne, Outreach Coordinator, Darren Moon, Engineering, to do an in-house review. We're going to reach out to developers, builders, landowners. We're going to also reach out to persons interested in water quality, natural resource protection. And we're going to do all that before we bring the proposed amendment to the Planning and Zoning Commission and then ultimately to the Board of Supervisors. Last thing I want to talk about is the 2020 U.S. Census. It is 2017, but we are starting on that process. The Board appointed a committee. They put our department as the liaison, but Deb, myself, Leanne, Matt, JS coordinator, and Lucy, the auditor, are on this committee. the U.S. Census Bureau advises, suggests to counties to reach out to cities that don't have the capability of reviewing and analyzing data digitally to assist them with the review process. And we're actually reviewing boundaries that have occurred through annexations or and we're also looking at addresses, to put dwellings to properties. And so we have heard back from everybody. City of Ames, Story City, Kelly, Maxwell, and Slater are proposing to do their own addressing review. Kelly, Maxwell, and Slater have indicated that they would like to do their own boundary review. So on a calendar basis, February through April of 2018, we'll have 120 days to review all this data. We'll send it back to them, and then through September of 2018, they process it. And then we've got a 30-day period, August through September of 2019, to respond to it. They call it an appeals process to challenge any data that we don't agree with. But they're very particular about how the information is stored. We've got a room across from our offices with lock and key. We're going to have a separate computer. And everybody, we have a list of people in this building that have access, that will have access to this data. They're also very specific about what is to happen after we complete this process in April of 2020, that how it's to be destroyed, whether it be actually physically destroyed. They're very specific about how that's supposed to happen, or how you are to mail this information to them. So we're going to make sure that we follow all those requirements.
You're mostly going to be focusing on boundaries, right?
Boundaries and addresses.
I'm wondering why the security on this?
Throughout the document, it talks about the confidentiality of it.
Interesting.
In 2010, I was in planning, but I didn't have the role that I have now with it, so.
Yeah. But you're not talking about any individual's data?
Well, you'll have property owners' information, addresses to a specific site.
Like all that stuff that's on the assessor's public website right now?
Probably that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Strange.
They're very particular about keeping it.
Usually that kind of data protection is established as an across-the-board for handling all of this census data. So what applies to one applies to all. Kind of scenario.
Well, right down to the actual survey that I will fill out when I...
Exactly. So you will be putting some personally identifying information onto, that...
Because they don't want to have different policies that apply to different kinds of data.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. Because you might end up with a facility like this room that is housing multiple types of data.
Right.
And you don't want one type of data mixed in with another, and then
different protocols applied to each.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to have a separate computer in a separate office that's going to be under lock and key.
Interesting.
So that's all I have for you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? All right. Are there any commission comments? Okay. Do a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.